This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. A lifelong campaigner for the people of Sarawak, Peter Kalang, the chairman of the Save Rivers Network, was very recently honoured with the 2019 Seacology Prize. So the prize is awarded to people for protecting island environments, and Peter is the first Sarawakian and only the second Malaysian to receive this honour for his work through Save Rivers, which of course supports and champions Indigenous communities and their rights across Sarawak and also beyond. And Peter joins me now to tell me more about his work, which I think is very far from done. Welcome, Peter. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and then thank you very much, Juliet, for having me.
It's a pleasure. So, I mean, we spoke in 2017 about the work that you do, but I think it's time we did a refresher. And, you know, first of all, congratulations again on receiving the 2019 Seacology Prize. What an honour.
Yeah, thank you very much. And then it was the work of so many people, including people like you are doing the reporting and make this big problem that we have in Sarawak into a top of the town, shall we say.
It's nothing compared to what you've doing. I mean, you know, Dwayne Silverstein, he's the executive director of Seacology. He said, you know, you've had to endure attacks on your reputation, risk to your freedom, even, I think, rifts within your own family and friends because of the work that you're doing and, you know, your outspoken position against destructive development. I mean, tell me about that. You know, how did you go from an engineer in an oil and gas company to become the chairman of Save Rivers?
Well, when I was working in the company, I was also doing something similar, but not going against them, because I have always been labeled as, what shall we say, public enemy.
The rebel.
Yeah, I was the chairman of the president of the union at that time. And then because there was a big gap between the, what they call this perk and the salaries of the expatriate compared to the local staff at that time. So we fought a lot about that. And then not only that, we were talking also about the environment as well, because there were a lot of things that the company did which were not at all good for the environment. We have oil sump, which was full of oils, and sometimes we have oil spill, which the public did not know about because people were not so conscious about oil spills and all these things in those days. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we were lucky to have some very good guys who are in the union. So we brought this up to the company, and since then, the company has improved a lot. I think the company I used to work with is one of the best as far as safety, health and safety is concerned. So this is something that I have done over the years. Mm-hmm. But about being labeled as public enemies and all that, I think this is something that one has to endure when we have certain type of, certain ideas, certain things. People generally don't want to change. If there is somebody in the community or in a company who wants to change and all that, sometimes we receive a lot of opposition from well-intentioned people around, because they feel that this is we are going out of the norm, you know. Mm.
But, you know, you were in your 60s, if I'm correct, when you started Save Rivers. And could you just, you know, remind us what it was that triggered you to start Save Rivers?
I left my professional career quite early because at that time, our refinery was closing down, and then they were asking, you know, those of you want to stay, you can stay. Those of you want to go, when to go. So when I look at it, well, I've been earning my living all this while. Why don't I do something else, you know, to do something that is beneficial not only to my family and myself, but also to the public in general. Mm-hmm. So that was when I was being invited to join a conference, or shall I say, it was a workshop about 12 dams that the government was going to build. And at the end of that workshop, they nominated people who should sit in the committee to go against the dam, to oppose the dam, to do the campaign and all that. Mm-hmm. So I was more or less, shall we say, jobless at that time. So I was more or less like voted by default.
Well, I mean, it's been how many years, and you've been, you know, continuously championing and empowering Indigenous communities through Save Rivers. And I suppose one of the greatest victories was actually of Save Rivers was stopping the construction of the Baram Dam. Could you remind us about that? You know, what factors do you think led to that particular victory? And that was a hard-fought victory, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was. I think there were, shall I say, there were four major reasons why we could succeed. First of all, this was a campaign that we did, and then we involved the people, the grassroots people. These are the masses. These are people who actually be affected by the dam if it was going to be built. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of groundwork. We went to the villages. Personally, I visited about 20 villages. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole 2 years work going into the interior by boat, on rough timber roads, sleeping in sometime in the jungle and things like that.
Wow,
you know?
Yeah.
So that was very tough. And then we managed to rope in a lot of people from the villages to be involved. And then, and the beauty of it all was that they have not heard about the proposed construction of the dam. So the first people who brought this bad news to them were our group, the Save Rivers Network. That's how it was. And that was the first reason. So they were behind us. We managed to collect 10,000 signatures out of 20,000 people who are going to be affected. But you must understand, not all of them are living in villages, because some of them have migrated to town, although they own land and houses in the village. So that was the first point. We moved the masses. Second point was because of the collaboration that we had with, we started with 8 NGOs or civil society organizations at that time. Mm-hmm. So we could start from day one. We didn't have to. We got the resources from all the different NGOs that we could manage. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, of course, was the sympathetic chief minister, our late Adnan Najib Satim, who was willing to listen to the people from the grassroots. I could not believe it, because when we wrote to him, I mean, before that, we have been writing to the previous chief minister, before Adnan, I mean, he never even bothered to answer us. Not only didn't he bother, but some of our people who were before me, who were campaigning against the dam, when they brought the signatures to his office, they were being arrested and put in lock up. So Adnan, on the other hand, when he received our letter, he actually asked his private secretary to call us and phone us and say, you asked to, I mean, can you meet on Monday? But, and then second phone call, can we meet on Saturday?
Wow.
So we went to see him on Saturday. Of course, there's nobody working in the office on Saturday. So he invited us to his home.
Amazing.
That guy was really humble. Mm. You know what? When we reached the house, we were trying to park our car outside, and then we were all dressed up. You can imagine, we need to meet the chief minister.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in West Malaysia, but here in Sarawak, the chief minister is almost equivalent to the prime minister.
Okay, I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, so we were all dressed up in ties and jacket and whatnot. And then the private secretary came running to the car park and said, can you take off your tie, take off your jacket? I was wondering what is going on. When we went in, that Adnan was sitting on the couch. He was on a, with a T-shirt, and not just an ordinary T-shirt. And then he was sitting there, and he invited us to sit down with him. And then we had a chat. Like old friends. I've never met the guy before, you know that.
Wow, that's wonderful, yeah.
So open. And then at the end of the meeting, he said, whatever it is, he said, I will listen to you just like I have been listening to the proponents of the dam, he said. And then the only thing I'm interested in is let there be light, he said, for the people in the interior. I got a shock when I heard that. And then the fourth thing, of course, is the persistence showed by the people from the grassroots. They were the ones who manned the blockade. They were the ones there. Every time we had public demonstrations. We went to Kuching, we came to Miri, we were in Kuala Lumpur, we were in Penang, we went right to the Parliament. We walked from Kuantan to the Parliament. Remember that green walk that they had?
Yes, yes, I do.
So we were there, and that was the best place where we displayed our, you know, our opposition to the proposed dams. So those are the factors, I think, that resulted in the big decision by Adnan to cancel the Baram Dam. Not only that, he also said that as long as I am chief minister, there will be no more mega dams. We don't need it, he said. I think that was the thing.
I'm speaking today to Peter Kallang. He's the chairman of Save Rivers Network. And Peter was recently honoured with the 2019 Seacology Prize, which is awarded to people for protecting island environments. And Peter is the first Sarawakian and second Malaysian to receive this honour. And so we're discussing his work through Save Rivers Network. We'll continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line from Sarawak today is Peter Kallang. He is the chairman of the Save Rivers Network, and Peter was recently awarded the 2019 Seacology Prize, which is awarded to people for protecting island environments. So, Peter, I mean, before the break, we were talking about the success that the network had in stopping the construction of the Baram Dam. And, you know, you did mention that the late Adnan Satem, he did say that no more mega dams in as long as he was chief minister. Sadly, he has passed away. And I also remember something else you said, that after the completion of the Bakun Dam in 2011, the then Energy, Green Technology and Water Minister Peter Chin had mentioned that there would be no worry about power shortage in Sarawak for a long time because of the dam being commissioned. Are there still any sort of mega dam projects being proposed in Sarawak?
The existing chief minister, our Abang Johari, he did mention about a year ago that they were looking at building dam in Trusan and Ulu Bedamit, that is in the Limbang and Lawas area, mm-hmm. in the eastern part of Sarawak. Mm-hmm. But so far, they have not mentioned it again. But anyway, we are always on the watch out because dams are no good, especially when it drown all the forests, all these flora and fauna, mm-hmm. and the worst part of it, the worst tragedy that these mega dams bring is because it displaces people.
Of course.
When you displace a whole village and all that, it will affect the livelihood, it will affect the culture and tradition of the people. This is the fear that we have. Yes, there is always a danger that they will build dams again because they are looking around for money, they're looking around at the economy because now you know that all our timber are gone, there's no more timber export, and our oil and gas is also depleting. So we are always on the watch out.
Mm-hmm. You know, the usual, excuse given, you know, the proponents of economic development see dams as a necessary component to continued economic growth in the region, you know. But of course, environmentalists and human rights activists such as yourself, you know, you point, as you mentioned, to the ecological and human rights costs. So how do we sort of balance that, you know, that need to boost economic activities while protecting the people and their rights in Sarawak?
I think the government has put this thing, you know, it's a typical way that they do things. There is top, bottom, you know, mm-hmm. they decide and then they will do without proper consultation, without proper environmental impact assessment and all the things that they are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So what they should do is to go down to the ground, to go down to the ground and see what the people want, you know, because we have a vast area of land, and our population is, we are sparsely populated in Sarawak. We have a lot of wealth in that sense. Why don't you go to the ground? First of all, look at the possibility of using the people, you know, getting the people and see what we can work together, how the government can work together with them. And of course, build good infrastructure with them first. Mm-hmm. Build good roads that does not cause this downwash from rain that causes siltation in the river and all that, proper road, proper maintenance. And then with this good infrastructure, the people will come up and do their own things. And what the government has to do is to encourage them and to build them up. I always look at this thing, and you know, there are two ways of getting some If you can you imagine, if you are sitting up on top and you want the people at the bottom of the, let's say, on a building, you want the people at the bottom of the building to come up with you. There are two ways of doing it. First, you provide them a ladder so that they can climb on their own. Second, you can lower a rope so that you can pull them up. What the government has been doing, I think, they provide a rope, they pull them up, and that the people don't have to do anything. All they have to do is to cling to the rope. That is wrong. What they should do is to give them a ladder so that they can climb, so that, you know, all you have to do is good ladder that will not fall, and then they will climb on their own. So this is what the government have to do. And they have to provide infrastructure so that these people can do modern agriculture in small scale, not big, vast plantation that will destroy the forest, destroy the river, destroy the ecosystem. And this is what they have to do. You can see now, after Sarawak government has become the opposition, federal government is no more their friend now.
Yes.
There is not even a single day spare when they are not criticizing the federal government in the paper, in the radio, and all this other thing. And not only that, they pour out about 10 billion, you know, 10 billion ringgit on infrastructure development. Why did why did this not happen before?
Exactly.
They should have done this so that they don't have to pour it out like that. But now they're doing it without proper consultation, without proper environmental impact assessment. They want to do it so that they can win the next state election. So that is what I feel is lacking. They lack this consultation process that is so essential.
So again, it's that top-down effect. And like you said, no proper consultation. Like, for example, even when the dams were being built, like you said, you know, the locals living in the area were not even consulted or told about it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, so another thing that proponents of dams argue is that Sarawak is at a point where, you know, it's ripe for economic development and, you know, that this sustained economic growth actually requires energy production to keep it up. And hydropower might seem to be one of the most, attractive energy solutions for many. And so to not build these dams, that would force us to rely more on like coal and gas. And what would your response be to something like that?
From the emission viewpoint, hydropower in our type of climate in the tropics, it emits more greenhouse gases than even the fossil fuel power plant, you know. Because here we have a lot of organic materials and all this other. It will produce methane, it will produce carbon dioxide. All these are harmful to the environment. So you're talking about hydropower mega dams being clean energy. That is not true at all. It may be true in other type of climate, but not here in the equatorial climate or the tropical climate. So it is dirty. It is a dirty industry, actually. Mm-hmm. And then another thing is, this hydropower, this energy that they're generating is not meant for the people here. Whom do you see coming in? Even from the start, when they do the construction of mega dams, you can see all these companies, Chinese companies, you know, the Three Gorges, and all these Sino Hydro. And then at one time, we have Hydro Tasmania, and then we have the Norwegian company, the Norconsult. All this, and then especially the Chinese company like Sino Hydro and all that, they bring their own workers. Even the sweepers, they, sometimes you can find them, they are all foreign workers, see? We went and sneak into the work site, Murung Dam, when they built it.
Right.
All the notice boards were all in Chinese characters. And then you can see that all these officials and all that, they are all Chinese national. I'm not talking about Malaysian Chinese. From China. So what benefit does it bring, even during the construction site? And then, of course, when they generate the power, they bring in people from outside, people who are doing this aluminium smelting plant, all these foreign companies. And then you can see the workers in these industries as well, they are most of them are foreigners. That's why in Bintulu at one time, there was a big fight between the local employees, local blue-collar jobs, and the foreign workers, to the point that it became a big issue that they separate the place where they eat, separate the living quarters and all that. So that is not good for our economy. I think it is good, and then you talk about GDP and all that. Oh, maybe it is good, but for the guy, the man on the street, the people in the village, the people whose land are being drowned, the people who are breathing all these fumes from the factories, toxic fume, they are not benefiting from it.
So I guess what you're saying, you know, there's not an adequate assessment of the impacts done. You know, there's no proper disclosure of information. There's no sort of, I guess, transparency in all aspects, you know, when these projects come in.
That is right. Because what happened, even our EIA here, the Environmental Impact Assessment Study and all the requirements, when they built the Bakun Dam, our then ship minister decided to have our own. You know, we don't, and then they are not obliged to put it into the public domain so that people can look at it, scrutinize it, and all that. Yeah. And we wrote in when they completed the EIA of the Murum Dam, we wrote to them, we asked them for a copy. And then they wrote a long letter, they took the opportunity to criticize us how we were against the EIA in Baram because we sabotaged it, because we knew that EIA is just an eyewash, you know, they do it as a window dressing so that people say, oh, they're doing it. But, you know, like in Murum, the dam was about 70% completed, and then the EIA was given to the people affected by the dam. But they did not give that thing. They asked them to read it in the district office or in the ministry there. That's what they did. They did not publish it. And then we tried to go there. We wanted to take it out and photocopy it. You're not allowed to take it out.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's what happened, you see. So what is the purpose of the EIA? You know?
Just to tick a box lah, to say that it's been done.
That's why. So I find that it's a joke, actually.
This is why you're known as a public enemy, Peter. Okay, so, you know, but Save Rivers, you've always said that before, that a good example of a system that could be adopted, especially for rural Sarawak, was the microhydro. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, microhydro is people's friendly. And not only that, what we do for when you build microhydro, Save Rivers doesn't build. What we just connect the people who are good at this, who are all the experts to come in,
sure.
And we connect them with the villagers. And then, of course, we help them to look for fun and all that. So what they do is they don't only build it for them, but they get the people from the village to do gotong royong, you know, to put up the poles, to drag the cables, things like that. And then they would build it, and then they will teach them how to maintain it. And beside that, for the women's folk, they will bring in people who use the power from the microhydro. And then like in a village in the Ulu Baram, in Tanjung Tupalib, the women folks, they bought some sewing machine and taught them how to do dress and all this other stuff. And then cake making, how to use their power. Because the power is not only meant for lighting, but it's meant for SMI, small and medium-sized industries. Mm-hmm. That can generate income for the people using the power that is generated from the microhydro. So that is what we encourage. Like what I was saying to you, it is not a matter of pulling the rope so that they can come up, but we provide them a ladder so that they can use their own strength, empower them. That's what we are doing.
Okay. And I know another thing that you're working on is clean collaborations. Am I correct? Earlier this year, there was a huge conference that was organized by Save Rivers, bringing in all these different partners and experts from across the world. Tell me a little bit about that, you know, these different efforts that you're working towards for clean energy.
Yeah. Earlier on, you know, I was saying that they call us public enemies and all that. But what we're trying to do is to collaborate with them. So...
yep.
We want to make friends with them somehow, but we are not totally with their philosophy.
You're offering alternative philosophies, right?
Yes. So what we are doing is we got people from overseas. Kristen Mills is a senator in the Green Party in Australia. She was one of those people who came up with the blueprint for the green energy in Tasmania and Australia as a whole. And then we got again Dan Cameron, an expert in energy who has been working all over the world. At one time during Obama's time, he was taken as the consultant for the power supply in the States. Mm-hmm. So we got these people, and then we had Sebeko from the United Kingdom. He couldn't come himself, but we got him to do a talk on Skype for the conference. Mm-hmm. And we got our Malaysian people from SEDA, the Authority for Alternative Energy in federal government. We got Sarawak Energy from Sarawak. We got the Sabah Energy as well, who came in. We have other people who are the equipment suppliers, people like who expert on solar system and on biomass. They were all people there. And of course, we got the people from the village, people who have experience with micro hydro in the village for the last 20 years. And so that was, I think, the first time that the people, I mean, people like Sarawak government and Sarawak Energy was willing to come and sit down with us, and we talk about what we are doing and share experience. And we hope that this is just a beginning of it. We want to see that we continue to engage with each other and talk to each other, mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, benefit from each other and understand each other.
Because mm-hmm. I know that, for example, Indonesia's plan to build their new capital in Kalimantan, I mean, that is, I guess, a source of worry as well for the area around there, right? I mean, like the kind of impacts that will happen for such a large-scale development. Is that something that you are maybe slightly concerned about as well?
Yes, we are concerned about that, because especially our chief minister and the minister for utilities and energy water system, they are very excited about this, because they are thinking that we now have consumers for the excess power that we are already generating. That seems to be the thoughts at the moment, because we have a lot of excess power. You know, we have Batangai, we have Pakun, we have Murum,
yeah.
you know, three dams, and then we don't have enough consumers. So there is not enough demand for it. So they're looking at it. That's why at the moment they are trying to get Brunei to buy power. They get Sabah to buy power. Now, Kalimantan is another potential, the new capital for Indonesia. Mm-hmm. It's a potential consumer. So they're very excited about it. But we, of course, we know that the Sarawak Energy and Sarawak government is trying to collaborate with the Indonesian government as well. They are going to build mega dams in Kalimantan as well. So I don't know the progress of that. There is a lot of talk about it on the social media. So it looks like they're exporting the tea industry outside because of the, you know, the people who are opposing to it in Sarawak.
Yeah, because and I, you know, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, you know, the Trusan Dam, it was mentioned. We haven't quite seen any progress, but there is always, I suppose, the shadow of it actually happening. Despite, as you say, there's an energy glut happening in Sarawak.
Yeah, that's right. Because we don't know what is going to happen, because they're not so open about what they're trying to do now. When I look at the what they call the energy that they're doing now, and they're doing some rural electrification using solar energy, and then of course they're looking at, there is a big coal power plant in Balangian that is already commissioned this year, and that is another dirty industry that we see. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, probably if they get enough consumers, enough demand for the energy, probably they will go on and do this Trusan and Ulun Bedamit dam again.
Okay, all right. And you know, how are you through Save Rivers, how are you training or helping indigenous communities, local communities of Sarawak about their rights, you know, I guess to prepare them in case any of these things should happen?
We do a lot of workshops, forums, trainings, and our training would be something, even this United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, where it covers on right to land, right to the way of life, right to what they call properties, and right to the place where they live, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then of course, we are also doing on the Malaysian Constitution, where it also spelled out there. And by the way, the UNDP, the United Nations Declaration on Rights of Indigenous People, you know, is also one of the signatories there is Malaysia.
Mm. Yes, I do know. Yes.
And then we're also doing this paralegal training, and then teach them the what do you call this, if you get arrested, and then what are you going to ask the police and things like that. You know?
Very important knowledge. Very important.
Never know when it happened.
You need to know your rights, yeah. I spoke to some folks from Sabah, actually, who are opposing the construction of the Papar Dam. And they actually also cited Save Rivers as, you know, helping them to get together, to band together to fight that. I mean, they are still continuing to fight it because, of course, they also were not made aware of the construction of the dam. You know, nothing has been told to them. So everything that they're reading is from the media. But, you know, just to say that they did point to Save Rivers as one of the organizations that helped them to mobilize and to get that news out to the public as well, that, you know, they don't know anything about what's happening.
Yes, we are doing what we can in order to support our friends there in Sabah, mm-hmm. just like we do also in Semenanjung. We are helping them because from this 9 years experience, almost 10 years now, mm-hmm. we have a lot of experience and what to do, where to go and all that.
What to expect, right? Yeah.
Yeah, what to expect. And then that's why we share with them so that they don't have to go through all the things that we have done before, but not to learn from the success that we had. So that we have been helping them, things like doing press statement and, you know, things like that, and then doing signature campaigns and all that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I guess, you know, just to conclude, Peter, you know, what final message would you like to leave us with? You know, I mean, all this hard work, and like I said in my intro, you know, the work is far from done, but what are you going to be working on next, and what final message would you like to leave us with?
We at the moment, we are doing some conservation in the Ulu Baram. It's an area almost 300,000 hectares.
Yes.
Which again is being agreed by our late Chief Minister Adnan Haji Satim. Mm-hmm. And we have been working together at the Forestry Department, but we have yet to see them gazetting it as so, although they are working with us. And what we are doing also, we are engaging the university, what they call the UNIMAS, mm. University of Sarawak, to do the consultation, because we want to show them this is how we want to go about this thing. Mm-hmm. Go to the ground and do consultation, not with the headman alone, but everybody that we can, you know, consult in the village. And then after that, this November, we have this study going on. I think I spoke to you the last time we met by Jose Fergoso.
Yes.
From the University of Stanford. He will be coming here, and then we're going to train some locals to do a study on the flora and fauna, and also the tradition and custom of the people, how they relate themselves to all these things. So that will be already applied for permit to do that, and it is already more or less approved verbally, but we have not received any black and white yet, mm-hmm. verbally approved by the Sarawak government. So we are very excited about that. Mm-hmm. So that we know exactly what is there, what are we protecting? You know, when we fight against the dam, what are we protecting? So if we have all this information, we will use this again as a database, you know, for us to justify what we are doing on the ground. So my advice to my friends in Sabah, in Semenanjung, or even my friends, there were some of them who come from Myanmar and Laos who came and visit us, who are affected by the dam. The dam seem to be the flavor of the century here in Southeast Asia.
Mega dams, right? Just flooding everything, yeah.
Yeah, like in developed countries like the States and Europe and all that, they have decommissioned a lot of dams, you know, because they are not economical anymore. So my advice to these people who are affected by the dam, try to get the support of the grassroots. With the grassroots, you can do a lot of things. If you get their support, you can move, you can change a lot of policy of the government.
All right. Thank you so much, Peter. If anyone's listening and they'd like to get in touch with you, you know, what is the best way that they can do that?
They can go to our website. It is saverivers.org. Yeah. There is one column there where they can write in. We are willing to, you know, open to any discussion, any support that they need. We can do what we can.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I've been speaking to Peter Kalang. He's the chairman of the Save Rivers Network. And just to remind everyone, Peter recently won the 2019 Seacology Prize, which is awarded to people for protecting island environments. And Peter is the first Sarawakian and only the second Malaysian to receive this honor. And if you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.